Before I get started, I need to acknowledge someone, Krista Blackwood. Yes, stand up. This is Krista's last Sunday. Aww, yeah. So, it's a bittersweet day. Obviously, we don't want to see you go, but we are happy for you and your family. We know this is going to be a great experience. And we have a time to celebrate with Krista after the service. There's going to be a reception in Common Grounds, and so I encourage you to go and enjoy your time there and say goodbye to Krista. And there are some cards there you can sign. There's going to be a cake, you know, so enjoy this last time.
Basket for money?
Yeah. 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 So, let's make sure that we send Krista out with our blessing, okay? And Krista, we really are going to miss you. That's my only regret in all of this, is that somehow the Lord didn't cause our paths to cross sooner. But, you know, who knows what the future holds. So, yeah. Thank you, Chris.
Would you like me to preach now?
Yes, if you'd like to. All right. You know, this month, college graduates all over the country have been listening to people give their commencement speeches. And, you know, in these commencement speeches, people are supposed to give the graduates wise words, right, to live by. Well, here's some of them. Oprah Winfrey at John C. Smith University in North Carolina: being human means you will make mistakes. And you will make mistakes because failure is God's way of moving you in another direction. George Wendt, you know, he's a Kansas City native from Cheers, and he spoke at Xavier. It's like, how do you get George Wendt? You know, it's like, I don't think you're feeling too good as a graduate when George Wendt gets up to speak. I don't know. Anyway, here's what he said: give yourself permission and time to figure out who you really are and what you really want, and have fun. That's fantastic, isn't it? George W. Bush at SMU: those of you graduating with high honors, awards, and distinctions, I say well done. And as I like to tell the C students, you too can be president. So, you know, all of us, no matter our stage in life, our age, are looking for ways to navigate through the complexities of life that we face. We face a myriad of decisions every day, and, you know, who is going to be our guide? What will be our guide? I would submit to you, we need wisdom. We need wisdom. You know, many of us look to rules. What are the rules? Is there a right and a wrong thing to do? But, you know, whatever you think is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, and I don't want to suggest there is no such thing as right and wrong. Obviously, I think that there is. But many situations aren't clearly informed by those rules. You know, if you're not going to make an absolute mess of your life, then you need something beyond the rules. You need something beyond morality. You know, wisdom is not the same thing as moral goodness, but it's not less than being morally good. It's more. For example, if you want to help the poor, that's a great thing. That's a noble cause. You can do it ethically, like not violating any laws, but still ruin their lives because you're not conversant with the complexities of how poverty works. You know, a strict moral code is not going to answer all of life's questions. Nor will having knowledge answer all of life's questions. You know, if you had sufficient knowledge, you could choose the right car, you know, if you're going to buy a car. However, many decisions that we have to make don't really have a clear-cut answer. And I think that a lot of our lives are lived in this kind of gray area. The majority of decisions that we seem to face have a variety of options that seem both reasonable and morally neutral. Who should I marry? What career should I pursue? Where should my kids go to college? Should I stay in my job or make a change? Should I confront that person or should I keep my mouth shut? Should I take a risk or should I play it safe? You know, though these decisions can be life-changing decisions, obviously. And a misstep, a bad decision, can have devastating consequences. And simply having a strict moral code is not sufficient to guide you through those decisions. Knowledge isn't enough. We need something that we rarely talk about in our culture. We need wisdom. We will make a mess of our lives if we don't have wisdom. And there's no better place in the Bible to go and learn about wisdom than the book of Proverbs. And so this morning we're starting an 8-week series out of the book of Proverbs. We're going to be looking for true wisdom. Now today's message is divided up into four parts: the importance of wisdom, the definition of wisdom, the problem in attaining wisdom, and then the solution to that problem. So the importance, the definition, the problem, and the solution. How important is wisdom? Well, in the first three verses of our reading, it's important to note that wisdom is speaking. This is a poem where wisdom is personified and is speaking. I, wisdom, am more important than silver, than choice gold, than jewels. You know, wisdom is more important than anything else that we can desire. More important than wealth, fame, power. In other words, wisdom is more important than any of life's circumstances. You know, more important than the circumstances themselves is the ability to navigate wisely through those circumstances, whatever they may be. And why? Well, because few people ever get the circumstances of their lives where they actually want them to be, right? And if you do, you can be guaranteed that it's not going to stay there, right? Something is always going wrong, right? You know, many people have a lot of talent, intellect, you know, credentials, beauty, charisma. They have everything going for them, but their lives are a mess. Many people do not have those things, but their lives are thriving. What's the difference? Well, at least one difference is wisdom. Now, there's a reason why many of us are uneasy about our lives, and it's because we don't have wisdom. It's wisdom that we lack. Wisdom is more important than wealth, power, or fame. It's more valuable than anything. Nothing compares to wisdom. Now let's think just for a moment a little bit about what is wisdom. How do we define it? What's the definition? In verses 12 through 16, there are synonyms which are used throughout the book of Proverbs to help facilitate an understanding of wisdom. What is it? Remember, wisdom is speaking. She says in verse 14, I have insight. Insight. The Hebrew word means knowing how things really work. Knowing how something really works. How things really happen. Also, wisdom says, I dwell with prudence. And that means, in the Hebrew, means the ability to notice the little distinctions. The ability to notice the little distinctions. You know, I think of like Sherlock Holmes. My kids are like obsessed with that show on TV. And, you know, he walks into a room and he sees things, the little things that no one else sees, right? And that's what helps him solve the case. By me, says wisdom, kings reign, and by me, rulers decree what is just. Old Testament scholar Gerhard von Rott, I couldn't wait to say that guy's name. When I first heard that guy's name in seminary, I was like, that is maybe the greatest name I've ever heard. Gerhard von Rott. He says, wisdom is being competent with regards to the reality of life. Wisdom is being competent with regards to the reality of life. The wise have morals, for sure, and they have knowledge, but they also, in addition to those things, have a depth of character that enables them to navigate through life circumstances when the rules don't so easily apply. Wisdom, that kind of insight and understanding, enables us to make the right decisions in all of life's circumstances. Wisdom, in essence, will keep us out of the ditch. So that's the importance of wisdom and the definition of wisdom. Now let's focus a little bit on the problem in attaining wisdom. The problem in attaining wisdom. In verse 22 and following, wisdom speaks and says, I was with the Lord when He made the heavens and the earth. I was there. He made everything with wisdom. God created the world with wisdom. Why does the writer of Proverbs weave this long section into the writing about how wisdom was there in creation? Well, one is because it was such a revolutionary idea. In Eastern philosophy, basically, creation is basically just the result of an accident, basically, because it's all an illusion. In Western culture, typically the religions would describe creation as a result of a war between two gods. And the victor would, in essence, use the body of the defeated god to create the earth. Only in Judaism is the idea emerge that no, creation is the result of a wise order. There's a wise order to creation. There's a pattern to the created world. There's a wise pattern to all of reality. And if wisdom made the world, then we need to, in essence, align ourselves with that wisdom, in essence, to be in the flow of creation and not to be swimming upstream. Now, what do I mean? Well, consider aerodynamics. We know that if something follows the law of aerodynamics, then it will fly. If it doesn't, if it tries to deny those rules, then it will crash. What if the same is true with the rest of life? What if there is a pattern to the relational order? What if there's a pattern to the relational order? And if we aren't tuned in to that relational reality, then our relationships will, in essence, crash. What if the same is true with spiritual reality? If there's a spiritual created order, And if we aren't tuned into it, then our spiritual lives will crash. You know, foolishness is rejecting the wise order in which God created the world, going against the grain, going against the wise way that the Lord created things. And so there are two things that you need in order to be wise. First, you have to admit, acknowledge that there is a wise pattern to the way God has created the world. There are principles that make things work. God created the world with wisdom. But then the second thing you need to admit is that you don't know all of those principles. You haven't got them all figured out. You know, in the book of Proverbs, it's very interesting because you find most of what you imagine, these short statements that jump from topic to topic, verse to verse. You know, if you things like this, if you live according to God's law, you will thrive. If you don't, you will perish. If you work hard, you'll prosper. If you're lazy, you'll be poor. If you raise a child rightly, they will love you and thrive. If you raise them poorly, they will come off the tracks. You know, and if you're a moralistic kind of person, then when you hear those things, you kind of say to yourself, yeah, that's right. That's the way the world is. That's what I've always thought. But see, there's a problem. There's a problem because in Proverbs, as well as other parts of the Bible, we see all kinds of exceptions to those rules, to those created patterns, if you will. You know, some people who live according to God's law have lousy lives. Some people work hard but stay poor because of oppression. Some people raise their kids right, but they grow up and go off the rails. And if you're a relativistic kind of person, you hear that and you say, yeah, life is messy. You can't predict it. So there's this problem in being wise. Both of these sides, in essence, have to be held together in tension. Yes, there is a wise pattern to the way that God has created the world. And for the most part, if you live according to those ways, you will prosper. But on the other hand, there are exceptions. Lots of them. Life is not a simple equation. A plus B equals C. That's just not how life works. And if you live in the extremes, you will be what Proverbs calls a fool. You can be either a moralistic fool who just thinks the world is really simple and it's A plus B equals C, or you could be a relativistic fool who says, no, there are no rules. The rules are just whatever you want them to be. And you think about Job's friends. So Job is going through this incredible suffering. And his friends are the epitome of moralistic fools. They look at Job's life and they say, you must be doing something wrong because that's the way the world works. You do something wrong and God punishes you, and that's what's happening. And Job kept saying, no, that's not what's going on here. But they kept insisting. Why? Because that's the way the world is. They couldn't see the exception. And therefore, they weren't wise counselors to Job. They were cruel and insensitive. They weren't helpful at all. So that's the problem in attaining wisdom. It's not just as simple as living life by the rules. You've got to be able to navigate through life when the rules don't seem to apply. And how do we make sense out of those kinds of situations? So what's the solution? and this is where we'll end. What's the solution? You know, Proverbs, the book of Proverbs was meant to be used as a teaching manual, a teaching manual for parents and teachers. It was designed to be read in community, in a communal setting, under the tutelage of wise mentors. It's a curriculum, if you will. And it was meant to be read in that context, under the tutelage of wise mentors. No one proverb gives you the whole picture. And that's why you need wise mentors to help you read them, to discuss them, and then to learn the art of applying them, applying wisdom to life's most difficult situations. But you know, that's not typically how we approach Proverbs. That's not typically how we approach anything in the Bible. We just want to sit in our living room by ourselves and read it and get some simple answer. And that's not the way the Bible was intended to be studied and applied in our lives. It doesn't mean there's no value to reading it by ourselves. We should, absolutely. But much of what the Bible has to say to us and the wisdom that we learn from it is sorted out in the context of community under the tutelage of wise mentors. Well, maybe there's a solution. You know, what's the most basic point about this poem on wisdom? Wisdom is personified. Wisdom is an I. This quality, wisdom, is turned into a person. But what if it's not just poetry? What if wisdom is really a person that you can know and love? A person who will guide you. A person who will mentor you in wisdom. You know, there was a lot of wisdom literature that people were familiar with in Jesus' day. And one writing is called The Wisdom of Sirach, or Ecclesiasticus. It's an apocryphal writing written between the closing of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New Testament. Here's how the end of The Wisdom of Sirach ends. Turn unto me, you who are untaught. Why do you say you are lacking in these things, and why are your souls so thirsty? I say to you, find wisdom. Put your necks under its yoke and bear its burden. If you are intent, you can find wisdom. See with your eyes that I have labored for it, and I have found for my soul much rest. And there's both a call and a challenge. You were taught and thirsty, untaught and thirsty. Seek wisdom. Get yourself under its yoke. So I wonder how the listeners reacted when 2 centuries later, this untrained rabbi got up and said, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Very similar, but one big difference. One says, you know, find wisdom. Place yourself under its yoke. Bear its burden. The other says, come to me. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Jesus is saying, that person, wisdom, who speaks, that person is me. I am wisdom. I was the one who was there when the world was made. I am wisdom personified. And Jesus is saying, it's a relationship with me that will make you wise. Being wise is not just about memorizing a bunch of rules. Being wise is knowing Jesus. Do you want wisdom? Then place yourself under Jesus' yoke. Let Him be your mentor and your guide. It won't make life less complicated, but He will give you the wisdom to safely navigate through all of life's circumstances. I want to ask you now to